This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Ah, what a trip we're taking, okay? Some two people have bailed already, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro and putting up with this food. It's not like you see in some of these TV shows where they take out the wrapper with the freeze-dried substance that you don't want to possibly identify.
Yeah, no, we did pretty well. I mean, you know, everything was just so well done. But yeah, is it like five-star cuisine? No, but it was, considering where we were, my expectations were low. I just needed calories. And also this sense of gratitude. You realize just how much help you need. Now, you have to take every step yourself. No one can carry you up a mountain, but it does take a village to get the tents up there and everything else. And once we start getting closer to the Barafu base camp, which sits at 15,000 feet, and that's uncomfortable. If you stand perfectly still and you relax, you can breathe okay. But even a short walk, just 10, 20 yards, you really feel it. You feel winded like you just ran a sprint, except it takes a whole full minute or two just to recover your breath from just walking.
Well, as you're talking about the meal, by the way, I think of the movie Soylent Green.
Okay.
Soylent Green is people.
Do you remember that line at all, Jeff? Maybe Randall does.
I don't.
Oh, yeah, of course I remember Soylent Green, a classic for sure. Definitely. I'm not entirely sure what the relevance is here to Kilimanjaro.
I'm just thinking about the diet they had, which is somewhat more restricted. Yeah. I'm thinking, of course, of the shows I watch on TV. Like, for example, there are always these scenes in Stargate SG-1 where they have the little candy wrapper and they're opening it up and some nondescript thing is being consumed with less than supreme pleasure at having this nutritious meal. Probably something scientifically done for... Anyway, Jeff, let's go on. Let's continue with our mountain climbing, our spiritual journey.
We did have Mars bars, Mars candy bars.
You had the new Soylent-flavored Mars bars.
Yeah, that was a treat. I remember seeing, like, are those Mars bars? I'm in. Like, let's do this. Yeah, so we had those. Yeah. But, so once we got to Barafu Base Camp, and this is where it really starts to get powerful and spiritual, because it's only 3 miles now to the top, but it's going to take us 8 hours to do that. We're going to leave at midnight. So we go to try to go to bed, try to sleep around five. We eat a meal and then we try to sleep in our tents, which I can't really sleep. I'm anxious. I'm excited. I don't want to fail. That's the other thing, is I keep thinking about the goal, you know, the summit. And I'm such a goal-oriented person. But I lay there and try to relax. And then pretty soon it's 11 o'clock at night and time to wake up, because we have to start at midnight, because it's going to take 8 hours. We want to get up there around sunrise, and then we got to get back to Barafu camp. This is going to be a haul now. When I step out of the tent, it's the coldest I've ever been. And I'm a New England guy. I can take it. I can take the cold, but it is just frigid. And it's so hard to breathe. And we have headlamps on. It's the only light we have. And there's the city of Moshi way in the distance. And it looks like you're in an airplane, because it's just the little lights way down there. And we eat a little bit of food, and around midnight, we just start walking. The difference between 15,000 feet and 16,000 feet in elevation, as far as breathing goes, is brutal. The difference between 8,000 and 9,000 feet, not so much. You hardly notice it. But 15 to 16, and then 16 to 17, I mean, you know the oxygen is just below you at this point. It's about 3 in the morning, and, I mean, it's just the darkest and coldest I've ever been in my life. And I'm nervous. We've passed two plaques for people who have died, commemorating, you know, they died from the altitude right there. You realize people do die up here. And I don't want to be one of those people. And I also don't want to fail. You're almost like an automaton. Like, your brain doesn't work as well, because I remember at one point I had to unzip my jacket and put a layer on, and I couldn't get my zipper together. I just didn't have the coordination. It felt like I was drunk, but not even the fun drunk, just the not coordinated drunk. one of the guys had to come over and zip me up like a child. And I don't even know how I can do this. But I, you know, you push on and you push on. And then about 3:30, 4 in the morning, I turn around and I see just the faintest light out on the horizon. And I realize the sun is making its way around. We get a little bit higher, and then the sun's getting higher up and higher up. And finally, it's about 6:30 in the morning, and we reach the rim of the volcano, a place called Stella Point. And I turn around, and I see this sunrise. I mean, it was just this most powerful spiritual moment for me. I thought about what the Maasai people said about the summit of Kilimanjaro, that this is the house of God. This is where God dwells. And only those God deems worthy are allowed up here. And in that moment, I absolutely felt the presence of God, creator, spirit of the mountain, universe, whatever term you want to use. This higher power felt omnipresent all around me. And I felt my brother-in-law, Chris, at that moment as well. I felt his presence. I felt like he was with me the whole way, but right there, it felt like he was standing right next to me. And seeing the sun up, and the world had just warmed up maybe 15 degrees at least, and then you could see now, and your warmth, and the sunrise is there, and I suddenly had hope, where I had none just a few hours before. And in that moment, I realized, like, I am going to make it. I'm going to make it to the summit. It's still another 500 vertical feet, another half mile. It's going to take close to an hour. But I knew at that moment that I was judged, I was deemed worthy, and that I would make it. And it's a moment I will never forget. And I took a picture of it. It's in the book. You can see it. But it was just so profound, so life-changing. I'm so grateful that I captured it, because I get to see it whenever I want. I can look at the picture again.
Now, that's amazing. I was actually first introduced to Kilimanjaro in a song by Santana.
Oh. You know,
on the album Zebop. And it conveys that kind of a feeling. It's an instrumental, but it conveys that kind of a feeling, and it made me want to know a little bit more about it. I've never been there, but I mean, we're talking about, you know, a dormant volcano in Tanzania, Africa, with three cones, and this is the highest freestanding mountain in the world, 19,341 feet above sea level. So it may not be the highest mountain above sea level, but apparently it is a long way from the bottom to the top.
It sure is.
So, you know, it's really interesting to hear your story. I know of one other guy I talked to who did the trek. He called it a scramble. So you don't really need climbing ropes and all
right.
of that, right?
Yeah,
you can make it if you're in half-decent shape. Did you do any working out before going? Were you prepared for it a bit?
Yeah, so we 6 months of training, a lot of cardio, a lot of hiking in the mountains of New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and learning how to adapt to the cold and have the right gear and things like that. So, yeah, but we had a regiment that we were given for, you know, like do planks every day, sit-ups, push-ups. But the cardio regimen was really important, because it's endurance. I mean, you sometimes have to walk, you know, 6, 7, 8 miles in a day, and then do it all again the next day and through higher elevation, which is just exponentially harder because you don't have as much oxygen in your blood that you would at sea level. And so, so it's kind of like this culmination, this thing. And at that point, you know, so once we start making our way around the rim of the volcano to get up to the highest point, to get to the actual summit, it's just like this walking automaton, and I can see glaciers. I mean, these glaciers are going to be gone because of climate change. They predict maybe even by like 2030, they could be gone. So I'm going to be one of the last people to actually see and photograph these amazing glaciers. And then finally, there's the sign in the distance, and you get closer and closer, and it's just, you reach out and it's there, and I touch it. And it's this thing I've been thinking about for so long. And I thought, you know, I've done enough mountains to know that the summit isn't always the big moment, but I guess it's like the trophy, right? You competed, you get the trophy there, you get your picture taken, but that wasn't the profound moment. It was that sunrise. Seeing that sunrise was this big spiritual awakening for me. And the summit was just sort of like finishing it, just dotting the I's and crossing the T's at that point. Because we're only there maybe 10 minutes. It's can't breathe. You get your photos taken, and then we got to get down. We got to start making our way down.
Well, let's break it here, guys. Hey, let's break it here. More with Jeff, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-880-1896. 800-880-1896. 800-880-1896. That's 800-880-1896.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamG'day.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamG'day.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamG'day.com with Longevity. TeamG'day.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Oh, we're right at the mountaintop right now.
Yes.
I am not trying to visualize this because I don't want to be there. But I'm enjoying this story with Jeff and Gene and Randall. Okay, so you get to the summit, but you don't just stay there.
Well, no, because I mean, you know, you got to keep moving. You got to get down. It's cold. It's hard to breathe. But this sort of like epiphany moment when I'm at the summit and I've had the pictures taken and I'm excited about that. And you realize, oh my goodness, I am at the halfway point. That's halfway. You have to get down. It doesn't count. Getting here doesn't count. Getting down is what makes it count. You know, I start thinking about that whole idea that not only do I have to get down off the mountain, I have to get home. That was the goal all along, right? I got to get back to America, back to Massachusetts, back to my family. And otherwise, none of this matters. I was so singularly focused on that summit for so long, for months. But I mean, I thought about it since childhood. But I mean, to actually be that focused and to get there and realize this was never the goal. It was always to get back home. And then at that point, you just sort of shrug and you close your camera and you start walking back. And it's a long walk and you come down and it's this thing where I feel like when I was up there, it's almost like a picture that's a line drawing. Like you take a black and white line drawing and it would take weeks, months for the colors to sort of fill in and to fully appreciate this thing that I've gone through and what it means and how it affected me and how it changed me. You know, we get down to Barafu Base Camp and we get to eat a little more food and just a short rest because then we got to get down to another camp. And we've been awake and moving for, you know, God, with the exception of like a 4-hour rest, just on the go for the last like 40 hours. It's been brutal. And then we wake up the next morning and see there was a snow the night before on Kilimanjaro. The whole thing was just blanketed with white snow the following morning. And Hemingway wrote a short story called The Snows of Kilimanjaro. And there's just one line in there that really struck me. I'd only read it a couple weeks before I went over to Africa, but it said, he went into the mountains to work the fat off his soul, the way a fighter would work the fat off his body. And I went, the work the fat off my soul. Man, that's the thing, right? That's what this was about. You know, like you get in your 40s and you get comfortable. You get like this life that you think you want and the job that you're good at and you're comfortable with and the friends that annoy you, you've pushed them aside or whatever. And you sort of get into this midlife rut to realize like up there in that hostile environment, it takes grit to survive. And we all knew we had grit when we were younger, you know, when we were struggling to pay the rent and all that other stuff. But there's something about being too comfortable too long. And it was so amazing to get up there and realize I still have that grit. It's still in there when I need it. And that, to me, was one of the biggest takeaways.
Okay, true grit. Now, the sense I have about this is coming back down is a faster journey, or am I wrong?
No, it's a there's one way down. There's three or four different routes to get to the top. We took the longest because you get to acclimate the most, but it's one way down. It's 2 days down. Everybody takes the same path down to a different part of the mountain, and that's where you've got to get picked up. So, yeah, it's faster. Coming down is hard. Going up is all muscle. If you get tired, you rest. Coming down is impact on your ankles and your knees, and I find it much more difficult to come down a mountain than going up one, which is there's a life lesson in there somewhere, right? I mean, it's harder coming down. And then the realization of what this means and how it affects you and all that stuff. The lesson takes time to sink in. And I was taking pictures the whole way and I was journaling all the time and I was trying to write down every thought and feeling that I had because I sort of got the sense somewhere during this that like I'm changing as a person. And I really feel like I came back as a better man and I connected with something, you know, with something big and with something powerful up there.
That is, it's a really common experience from what I've heard from other people and read about that. I thought about maybe doing this. It's inspiring. Have you guys talked at all yet about how much it costs to do this?
We did.
Okay.
So yeah, I think all in about $7,000.
That's not bad for a spiritual, you know, awakening.
No, No, I agree with you. It really wasn't. And the U.S. dollar over there goes far. When we got back to our hotel after coming down off the mountain, we had two more nights in the town of Moshi. And just to give you an example, they had these 20-ounce Kilimanjaro beers that were $1 each. And so I took out a $20 bill, and I'm not quite sure how many. I think 12 is how many $1 Kilimanjaro beers you can get for $20. It was a lot, and they just kept coming and flowing, and it was sort of celebratory and amazing. But you start to realize, like, what I love about the mountain in general, right, is it's this ultimate metaphor for anything going on in your life. Right? Anything can be a mountain, like trying to get in shape, trying to find a new job, trying to get over a breakup, trying to finish a house project or anything like that can be a mountain that you have to climb. And then there's mountains that we put in our way on purpose and should, by the way, to kind of test that grit. And that was that's what this was for me, was to just sort of intentionally put something in my way and see if I could still do it here somewhere in the middle of my life and still thinking about the loss of my brother-in-law and how, you know, all the things that he's never going to get to do. And also realizing your own mortality, not knowing how long you have and the things that you better do because you don't know how long you're going to get on this.
Well, that all sounds really worthwhile. And were most of the people on this trip sort of in your same age range, demographic?
Yeah, we were all. I mean, I think the youngest guy was 30, my tent mate Brian. But most of the people were in their 40s, a few in their 50s. And everybody in our group specifically raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society to fight blood cancer. So there was it was a cool group to sort of realize we were all doing this not just for ourselves, but for a cause as well. Which helped motivate me, by the way. That was something I didn't expect. I mean, I wanted to do this, but I had over like 300 donors that had donated to me. I raised over $17,000 for them. And I printed out their names and I kept it in my backpack the whole way. And I would look at it in my tent at night because I'm like, even if you donated $5, I didn't want to let anyone down. And I found that very motivating, you know, just like I want to get to the top for these 300 plus people that donated to this cause because I asked them to.
Let me ask you a question here. And this is one of those mercenary responses. Say, for whatever reason, you couldn't complete the trip. Do you have to get back the money?
No. I know. I thought of that, too. But yeah, no, I didn't have to give back the money if I didn't complete it. It was, you know, you donated directly to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. You got a receipt, tax deductible, the whole thing. I never touched any of the money. It was all through them.
Okay, let's do our break here.
Yeah.
The book is The Call of Kilimanjaro. Finding hope above the clouds. We've gone to the summit, we've come back down. And Jeff Belanger is recovering. With Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Former President Trump says he's heading to the southern border in the next few weeks.
Well, a lot of people want me to. The border patrols and all of the people of ICE, if they want me there, they've asked me to go. And I really sort of feel I owe it to them. They're great people. They're doing an incredible job. It's impossible now with what they've done to stay in Mexico. Should have been left. And now they stay in the United States. And by the way, stay in and never leave.
Trump speaking with Fox News. The former president's comments coming a day after a group of GOP senators visited the border, saying they were stunned by conditions at facilities holding unaccompanied minors. and a detention officer at the Oklahoma County Detention Center in Oklahoma City has been hospitalized after being held hostage by an inmate. Officials with the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office say that the inmate was shot and killed by Oklahoma City police officers. The condition of the detention officer has not been released. This is USA Radio News. Following a trip to the southern border, a group of GOP senators said they would be unwilling to work on an immigration reform bill with the administration until the crisis on the border is resolved. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley questioned how they could pass an immigration bill when the border was still open. Representative Tony Gonzalez says there are some things that Congress can do to deal with that humanitarian crisis. The Texas Republican tells CNN that making changes to the work visa and asylum programs would provide some relief on the border.
If children are, you know, legitimately making the trek from these dangerous areas, which many of them are, right, and if they're legitimately seeking asylum, why do we have to wait till they reach America? Why can't we focus on Mexico and some of these areas? That way they don't have to make that dangerous trek. That's one answer to it. Another part is work visas. Let's increase the amount of work visas. If people want to come to live the American dream and work hard, well, let's welcome them through the front door. We absolutely need to know who's coming into our country, but we need to do it through increased work visas.
This is USA Radio News.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, we think when we go into these places that are kind of out of the normal path that one travels, did you see anything or experience anything in our paranormal universe during all this?
At the summit was very spiritual. I was raised Catholic. I sort of wandered away from the church late high school and into college. I think it just didn't really resonate with me anymore. And I became agnostic, never an atheist. I never got to that point. But I definitely found a different sense of spirituality, mainly because of my work in the paranormal, looking for ghosts and haunts. And thinking like, you know, hey, some people seem to stick around and longer than others and things like that. So to have this sort of spiritual experience and then to not put a label on it was very comforting to me in my adult life, you know, to not have to call it something that is specifically tied to a religion, even though someone who's religiously inclined might, you know, take it that way. You know, I did ask around a little bit when we were in Moshi. I was like, hey, any haunted places around here? Any sort of monsters or whatever? And they sort of laughed. In that culture, it wasn't something that they're too comfortable talking about. But at the same time, I think they could appreciate that I was asking just as a little more matter of fact as opposed to anything with any sort of like spiritual implication. That's one of the interesting things, right? When you talk about specifically ghosts and haunts, in some cultures, and even within the United States, there's certain parts of the country that tend to look at that as, well, that's dark stuff. That's satanic. Or, you know, there's only of God and of the devil. There's nothing in between. And I get it. We all have to figure out how to process the world around us in one way or another. And religion is one lens that we can view this world, I guess. But yeah, other than that, I didn't get to trip on any legends over there while I was in Tanzania. Maybe next time.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if you did much research prior to going there on any of that, but the people there near Kilimanjaro, there's a people called the Chaga.
Yeah, Chaga, yeah.
Yeah, so Chaga. And they do have a very close relationship to what they believe are their ghosts.
Well, ancestor worship, which is one of the earliest forms of religion, of spirituality, really. So their ancestors are always close by. Well, a couple of our guides were Chaga. Like that they're just like, yeah, I'm a Chaga. Like that's my family heritage. And talked about some of the parts of their culture and things like that. And we talked about Swahili and speaking a little Swahili, which was really neat. But yeah, so to me, it's funny that the earliest forms of religion in really all the world is ancestor worship. The idea that you reach out to your family that has come before you. And I wonder why someone would think to do that unless maybe they saw a ghost, right? A spirit, they knew in person. Say, wait, I knew you, but we buried you. Like you've been gone for months, but yet here you are. And the idea that, wow, you must, after death, it must like transcend this thing called death. So it makes total sense to me. And then we just get down to labels, right? Like one person's ghost is another's spirit, is another's from the devil, is another's angel, and so on. And labels are, I know we need them, but I also think that they can muddy the waters.
Oh, definitely. Well, that's why we need people like yourself and other paranormal researchers who can think about it in a fair-minded, but also critically minded, and by that I mean critical thinking perspective, so that you can sort it all out and look at it objectively. And, you know, it's really fascinating when you can look at it through that kind of a lens, because people do have these experiences, even you yourself. You were saying that you felt it was like a presence.
Yeah.
Of people. And so, I mean, if you're feeling this, who knows? Maybe it's just the thin air. Maybe it's not. But either way, you're not going to be the only one. We're all human beings and we all work pretty much the same way. So if you're having these experiences on a regular basis, it's only natural for you to develop some sort of a belief system about what they mean and what they are.
No, of course. And I truly believe that when it comes to all this stuff, including me at the top of the mountain there, I think we summon, and I don't mean in some like hocus pocus way. I mean, when you recall memories of the dead, when you're literally calling that person up. And when I was up there, I thought of Chris. I can't stress enough how few thoughts I was having on that mountain, because you're just broken down. I mean, it's the analogy I like to use is it's like you're a wet towel that's just been wrung out. Every drip drop has been wrung out of this towel, because on the summit, I mean, I cried, I laughed, and I could tell you, I couldn't tell you why for either one. Just emotions just poured out. You're oxygen deprived and just every emotion is just kind of coming out of you at once. But I do remember thinking about my family, and I remember thinking about Chris, and he was there. I felt him smiling next to me. And by the way, in life, Gene is going to climb Kilimanjaro before Chris would. Promise, right? Like, he would be, if we all lined up, everyone on Earth, Chris would be dead last. Gene would be right in front of him, right?
You know what? I have to tell you this right now. You're wrong.
All right.
The only way I climb Kilimanjaro is from the cockpit of a flying saucer or something.
Fair enough.
I'll look out. Okay, that's cool. Let's get home.
All right, fair enough.
Well, actually, that brings up an interesting point. Like, were there any people that were on, you know, made the trek by burrow or you know, were transported?
Nope. There's no way. You got to walk it.
Okay.
There's talk about putting a giant cable car up there, which I think would be tragic because it's it takes away from the whole experience. You know, like I felt like a pilgrim, you know, just walking miles and miles through this rough terrain to have this transformative experience. And there's no shortcut to a transformative experience. There just isn't.
It's like the walkabout thing.
Right.
You need that. You need to experience it. It seems that a lot of people's personal revelations or transformations come about through challenge.
Of course.
And that's probably putting it mildly. Definitely through tragedy as well. So to evolve as a human being, personally, spiritually, whatever you want to call it, what you were saying about just, you know, living in comfort and not paying attention to that aspect of your life is really true. And it's surprising how many people in the world just don't get that.
So I had a job, one of my first jobs out of college. I was working for an advertising agency, and my boss showed me this article that said most people retire at age 35. And of course, I'm like, that's a lot. What? That's absurd. Are you crazy? But then I read it. The point was most people, by the time they get about their mid-30s, they sort of like they don't really challenge themselves enough, and they get into sort of like this rut of a job, and they just sort of stick with it, and that's where they stay until they actually do retire for financial reasons. It hit me. I'm like, oh man, that sounds awful. Like, and I think that was his point, is to say, like, don't retire at 35, don't retire at 45, don't retire, right? Find something that, and sorry about that, invigorates you and challenges you and keeps you going. And makes it so, you know, you want to keep working and find that next thing.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was a lot older than 35 when we started this radio show.
and here you are still doing it all these years. You're one of the original podcasters, man. I mean, come on.
You know what? There was no such thing as a podcast when I did my original show, which is the technology show, which we don't do anymore. That started in 2002. Apple did not have a podcast. There was no such thing as a podcast at that point. Okay, so we were there first, or, you know, amongst the very few internet-based radio shows. We actually joined a physical network with the Paracast and the Tech Night Out Live in 2010. So maybe we were doing it in the reverse. But, yeah, we did indeed become one of the pioneers. I know there have been quite a few paranormal radio shows since we started. Some are still here, some are not. We're in our 16th year now.
It's amazing.
It is really amazing that it's taken this long. The book is called The Call of Kilimanjaro, Finding Hope Above the Clouds. Jeff Belanger, a ghost hunter, takes this journey partly in honor of his late brother-in-law. We got more to come with Gene and Randall. And Jeff, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com, and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech carbine upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com. Or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Ever so fascinating making this journey. Actually, I still like Stargates. I can't get over the way they do it in a Stargate. They just enter this thing and they're in another galaxy.
Well, until we get that, you know, again, but that's the shortcut, right? We were just talking about that before the break. Like, there's no shortcuts to enlightenment. But you start thinking about the profound nature of some of these experiences, and you got to look at it through the lens of, like, all of your experiences, everything from the ghost hunting to the sky watches for UFOs to all that stuff. And one of the reasons I've said I love the paranormal so much is that though it's considered the fringe of mainstream, it's out there on the fringe that's the most interesting. And it's also a place that we can have some of the safest discussions about really big issues. Right in the middle, you know, we can't talk about faith or we can't talk about things like that without putting it through the lens of some religion. But out here on the fringe, we can talk about how this stuff, and you can think it's just a story if that's what you want, or you can think of it as you know, something else. And yet it sinks in, right? The story itself sinks in and grows root inside of you.
I wanted to go back here now that we've covered the basics of the trip and the return. Your late brother-in-law's out-of-body experiences.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, on the surface, they can say, well, the guy is suffering from a terminal disease. And maybe he imagined everything. But out-of-body experiences aren't that easy.
No, and I also, I can't stress enough that you got to look at it through the lens of this, of Chris, right? I mean, not only is every out-of-body experience unique to the person, of course, but Chris is not a paranormal guy. Like, he's not a guy that read those books or watched those shows. He, and as I said earlier, he was not a religious person. In fact, he might have even been an atheist when I first met him. We never talked about God or religion. It was just one of those things like, eh, you know, it's for other people. An educator, he was a principal of a school. And so when this happened to him, he was as shocked and scared as anybody. And he called me because, you know, I'm into paranormal stuff and I might have something to say about it. And those were just such great conversations because he was just, hey, this thing happened to me. What do you think it means? And he just described it in great detail and had no filter on it. You know, it was not, he wasn't trying to sound like some TV show or something. And I thought it was just so genuine.
Okay, let's try and kind of combine the two here. Now, according to the mythology there, the Chaga, they believe that ghosts regularly visit their relatives in dreams where they can briefly carry them, meaning the dreamer, into the spirit world and return again. Have you had any dreams connected? with us in any way, with people who have passed on.
So I remember a dream I had years ago where it was so vivid. I was in my parents' kitchen where they lived in Connecticut, and the my two grandfathers were there. And I know they had passed on at this point. Both of them had passed on, but they're both standing in my kitchen, in my parents' kitchen. And they just looked at me and smiled. And that was the whole dream. I woke up and I remember just feeling overwhelming emotion. Just powerful, powerful emotion. Kindness, love, sadness, like all of it at once kind of thing. And when Chris was near the end, I know my sister, like he had said, like they had worked out signs and things like that, that he was going to try to come back and give her some kind of sign. And I've asked her about it, but my sister still, it's been years. It's been, oh my gosh, almost 5 years, over 5 years now that he's been gone. And she believes she's had some signs from him. I actually thought that he would come to me because he would know that I could handle it better than my sister. You know, I mean, I don't know if that makes sense, but that the message I might become the messenger. And so far, other than that experience on Kilimanjaro, and I had a psychic friend who told me that jokingly before I was going, and I said, I'm doing this in memory of Chris. She had said, she's like, Chris has a message for you that he's going to help you get to the top, but coming down, you're on your own. And I laughed because I was like, man, I don't get a lot of psychic readings. Sometimes they're offered to me, but I like, that does sound like his personality, you know, to say something like that. And
was this before you planned your trip to Kilimanjaro?
So once I committed to doing it, I mean, I told everybody, in part because I wanted to, well, I was raising money for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, but also because I felt like the more people I told, I don't want to come back and tell them I didn't make it, you know? So I was doing it as another way to motivate me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. I'm going to get to the top. I was telling everybody. I was telling the grocery store clerks and stuff, you know, like this, I'm going to do this. So when they saw me, they could be like, well, did you make it? And I would have to answer to them. And so, you know, at paranormal conferences and stuff, I'd run into some of my psychic friends, and that one sort of stuck out.
I mean, they could have known that you were going then before giving you that reading.
I told them I was going and doing right. this in memory of my brother-in-law, and then she announced, "I have a message for you." I don't know, you know, like I have a hard time.
If you got that one like 5 years ago before you thought about going, I'd be thinking, okay, that's a little bit.
No. It was a layup. If you're a psychic reader.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, again, not to disparage, I just can't relate to the psychic message thing. You know, I've right. never had an experience where I can say, oh, I get it, because I get those messages too. So I can't. And I'm not saying they're not having those experiences. I'm not inside their head, but it's not something that I typically relate to. So,
right. Here's something that else you might find interesting. I'm just, you know, just bringing up little tidbits here.
Yes.
Apparently the Chaga believe not only that ghosts can influence events on Earth, but that events on Earth, like in this world, reverberate through the spirit world where they are. So that when there's major upheavals in our world, it's felt in theirs as well. Which is really kind of interesting. I've never really considered that before. But apparently when the colonial powers first went into East Africa, they felt that their ghosts were growing thin and ragged under the heavy burden of colonialism, and that like their living counterparts were being forced to pay taxes, some kind of spiritual tax in the underworld. So, you know, this is a really complex relationship that they have with their belief system, even if there isn't necessarily an objective reality to it. It's quite a complex psychology.
So, no, and that makes all the sense in the world to me because, if you think about it, those are our ancestors. They're the people that came before us. Those are our parents and our grandparents. And if they still have the capacity to care once they're on the other side, of course they're going to care. I mean, I can imagine how I would be. I mean, I've got a daughter and I've got family and stuff, and I can imagine how I would want to look after them. And I know being alive, when my daughter suffers, I suffer. I mean, that's just because I'm a parent and I care about her a lot. So it makes total sense to me that there would be this sort of like two-way street to that suffering and reverberation and that interconnectedness, because we're a product of the people who raised us and the people who came before them and the people who came before them. And we're passing on their legacy, whether we know it or not, even whether we're even conscious of it. We're passing on those lessons to our own children and families and people around us. It's just how it all works. So I love the fact that they've identified that, hey, it's not just one way. The cares don't stop once you pass into the afterlife. You've got to continue to look after the world, because that's the thing, right? Like, so many decisions that I think are made, especially at some levels, I'm thinking like environmentally and things like that. Sometimes people are thinking in the very short term, which is fine for some stuff, but when you get into bigger issues, can really have rippling effects that can do damage for generations.
And, people are very self-serving, and the whole look out for number one thing is that's been a mantra, especially in the Western world, for generations and generations. So I just love this conversation, because you've opened up a really important area of discussion. And it sounds to me like this could be something that could move you into, not only your discussions about the paranormal, but motivational speaking, and in a way that you might be able to combine the two, because you come across to me as another one of these really positive people, sort of like Morgan Knudsen up here in Canada. Whenever we get talking with you or her, there's this radiant sort of positivity.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's keep the positivity up for a couple of minutes here. Jeff, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.